The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are wading into a topic that, well, a lot of people have strong opinions about.
Oh, yeah. Human intelligence.
Exactly. But often, people don't really understand the science behind it, you know? It gets tangled up in politics, old controversies.
Absolutely. So much baggage. But that's precisely what we want to cut through today.
Right. We're aiming to just look at the actual measurable science. What is intelligence?
And we're using Ian J. Deary's fantastic book, Intelligence, a very short introduction, as our guide. It really helps unpack what the trait is, how scientists measure it.
And crucially, why it seems to predict so much about a person's life, education, jobs, even health, surprisingly.
Yeah. Deary makes a strong case, backed by just tons of data, that intelligence is, well, it's real. It's measurable, and it has significant consequences.
So for you listening, this is hopefully a chance to get past some of the noise, the debates, and get a clear, concise look at the scientific consensus. It's a really important topic in psychology.
Definitely. And to really grasp the evidence, we need to talk about the author himself, Ian Deary.
He's not just summarizing other people's work, is he?
Not at all. He's a giant in this field.
Yeah.
Professor of differential psychology at Edinburgh. His focus, cognitive aging, health outcomes, and intelligence, obviously.
But what really sets his perspective apart, what gives it so much weight, is this incredible research project he led.
Oh, you mean the Lothian birth cohort?
Exactly. The cohorts from 1921 and 1936. I mean, the story behind this is just, well, it sounds almost impossible.
It really does. So picture this. Back in the 1930s and 40s, almost every single 11-year-old kid in Scotland took a standardized intelligence test.
Like the whole country's cohort.
Pretty much. And then, decades later, Deary and his team managed to find thousands of these same individuals.
Who are now in their late 70s, 80s, even 90s.
Yep. And they retested them using modern cognitive assessments.
That's just staggering. A 70-year follow-up on the same group of people's cognitive abilities.
It allows him to look at someone's score from, say, 1932, and compare it directly to how that same person performed decades later in old age.
So he's not just guessing about aging or comparing different generations.
No, he's directly measuring how intelligence holds up or declines across almost the entire human lifespan within individuals. That unique viewpoint, that data, is really the foundation of this book.
Okay, so let's get into the book itself, Intelligence, a very short introduction. Given how contentious the topic can be, how does Deary approach it? How does he keep it grounded in the science?
Well, his starting point is crucial. He insists we have to treat intelligence like any other biological or psychological trait. Think height or memory capacity. It's something real.
Not just a social construct or something vague.
It's exactly. His core argument is basically, intelligence is robustly measurable, it's significantly heritable, we'll unpack that later, and it's highly consequential for life outcomes. He kind of sidesteps the political fights by just laying out the most consistent, replicated findings.
In a logical order, right? Like building a case.
Precisely. It's like a scientific journey.
Yeah.
He starts with, okay, what is it? How did we start measuring it? That leads straight to the concept of the G factor.
Yes, G, general intelligence.
Then he looks at the structure.
Yeah.
You know, are there different types of intelligence? Fluid, crystallized.
We'll definitely need to talk about those.
Then the biology genes, the brain. And finally, he connects it all back to the real world, success, health, lifespan, cognitive epidemiology.
So the goal is really to give the general reader, give you an objective, science-based account without the jargon or the political spin.
Yeah, acknowledging the past problems with how tests were sometimes used, but not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, scientifically speaking.
Okay, so let's start where he starts, this concept of G, the foundation. This came from Charles Spearman way back when.
Over a century ago, yeah. Spearman noticed something really interesting. He looked at scores from lots of different kinds of mental tests.
Like logic puzzles, vocabulary, reaction time.
All sorts of things. And he found this universal positive correlation. Basically, if someone did well on one type of test, they tended to do well on the others too.
Even if the tests seemed completely different on the surface.
Right. Which led him to propose this underlying factor. The G factor, general mental ability. Deary describes it as like the central engine, you know, the basic mental energy or processing efficiency you bring to any cognitive challenge.
So it's not about what you know necessarily, but how effectively you can process information and reason.
That's a good way to put it. It's the core processing power.
And we should probably give a nod to Alfred Binet here too, right? Because he developed the first practical tests.
Absolutely. And his motivation is key. He wasn't trying to label kids permanently or sort society. He just wanted a way to identify children who needed extra help in school.
That context is so important. It wasn't meant to be deterministic.
Definitely not. And even the IQ score itself. We need to remember what it actually is.
It's relative, isn't it? 100 is just the average for your age group.
Exactly. It tells you where you rank compared to your peers. It's not some fixed absolute measure of your brain's total power or anything like that.
Okay, so G is the core. But like you said, the modern understanding is a bit more complex. It's seen as hierarchical.
Yeah, G is at the top, the general factor. But below that, abilities branch out. And the most important distinction, especially for understanding how we change over our lives, is between fluid and crystallized intelligence.
Right. GI and GC. Let's break those down. What's fluid intelligence, GC?
Think of GI as your raw reasoning power. It's your ability to tackle completely new problems, spot patterns in unfamiliar data, figure out complex systems you've never seen before.
Like figuring out a new app on your phone or solving a novel puzzle.
Exactly. It's about mental flexibility, speed, adaptability, when facing something new.
Yeah.
And the key thing about grief is, well, it tends to peak relatively early.
Like in your 20s?
Often, yeah. Maybe early adulthood. And after that, it generally begins a slow, gradual, natural decline with age.
Okay, so that's fluid. What about crystallized intelligence? GC.
GC is a different. It's your accumulated knowledge base, your vocabulary, your general knowledge about the world, the skills and wisdom you've picked up through education and life experience.
So knowing historical facts, understanding complex social situations, having a large vocabulary, that's GC.
Precisely. If grief is figuring out the new gadget, GC is knowing the history of the technology behind it or being able to explain societal impact.
And the good news about GC is?
The good news is that GC tends to remain stable much longer. It can even increase well into middle age and later life. This accumulated wisdom can often compensate for slight declines in fluid processing speed.
That distinction makes so much sense in terms of aging. You might not be as quick with brand new problems, but your depth of knowledge and judgment grows.
Exactly. It explains a lot about cognitive changes across the lifespan.
Okay, so following that, we get into the biology. This is where things can get, well, sensitive. Genetics, heritability.
Yeah, and Deary addresses heritability directly. The research consistently finds that for adults in developed countries, the heritability estimates for intelligence are quite high.
Like 50 to 80%, right?
In that range, yeah. But, and this is a huge but, we absolutely have to understand what that number means.
It's not destiny for one person, is it?
Definitely not. Heritability is a population statistic. It describes how much of the differences we see between people in a specific group at a specific time can be attributed to genetic differences within that group. It says nothing definitive about one single individual's potential.
And it's always genes and environment interacting.
Always. Deary emphasizes this gene-environment correlation. Someone with the genetic predisposition for higher intelligence might naturally seek out more stimulating environments, read more, engage in complex hobbies.
Which then further boosts their cognitive skills. So the genes influence the environment you choose, and that environment reinforces the genetic tendency.
Exactly. It's a dynamic interplay, not a fixed blueprint.
Okay, so that's the genetic angle. What about the physical brain itself? Does size matter?
Well, there's a small positive correlation between brain size and measured intelligence, but it's not huge. What seems much more important, according to the research Deary highlights, is brain efficiency.
Efficiency, meaning what?
Highly intelligent brains seem to use less energy to solve the same problem. When researchers look at brain activity using imaging, people with higher IQ scores often show less activation in certain areas when doing cognitive tasks compared to those with lower scores.
So it's not about raw power output, but about using the power you have more effectively.
Kind of like a more fuel-efficient engine, yeah.
Yeah.
And this efficiency is often linked to faster basic information processing speed, how quickly your nervous system can react and transmit signals.
Which brings us back beautifully to the Lothian studies and stability. If intelligence is tied to an efficient biological system, how stable is that system over decades?
And the findings there are, frankly, remarkable.
Yeah.
Deary's work shows incredibly high rank order stability.
Meaning your position compared to your peers stays pretty much the same?
Astonishingly so. If you were in the 90th percentile for intelligence among 11-year-olds in Scotland in the 1930s,
you were highly likely to still be near the 90th percentile among your surviving peers when tested again at age 80 or 90.
Overwhelmingly likely. Your rank relative to others changes very, very little across seven, even eight decades. It's one of the most stable psychological traits ever documented.
That's quite profound. But of course, everyone experiences some decline, right? Absolute scores might drop.
Oh, absolutely. The rank stays stable, but average scores do tend to decline in later life, especially on those fluid intelligence tasks. But Deary also notes that factors like good physical health, staying mentally active, education, exercise, these things absolutely play a role in successful cognitive aging. They can help slow the rate of decline.
So it's stable, it's measurable, it's linked to brain efficiency. The big question then becomes, so what? What does this actually predict in the real world?
And the answer, according to Deary and decades of research, is, well, quite a lot.
Yeah, IQ scores are consistently found to be the best single predictor we have for academic success, right? How far someone goes in education.
Yes, and also for occupational success, especially in complex jobs roles that require a lot of learning, problem solving, abstract thinking. Intelligence scores predict performance better than almost anything else in those contexts.
It really shapes the opportunities you can access and succeed in.
It does. But perhaps the most surprising and maybe even profound application Deary discusses is cognitive epidemiology.
Right. This field he helped pioneer. The link between intelligence and health, longevity.
Exactly. It's quite startling. Higher childhood IQ scores are statistically linked to a longer lifespan and lower rates of many major diseases.
Even after you account for things like social class or income.
Yes. Even when controlling for socioeconomic factors, the association remains. People with higher childhood IQs, on average, tend to live longer, healthier lives.
Why? What's the theory there? Is it just about getting better jobs with less physical risk?
That's part of it, potentially. But the theories go deeper. It might reflect a generally healthier, more efficient, more resilient biological system. Overall, a well-put-together nervous system might correlate with a well-put-together body.
Or maybe better health literacy, making better decisions about diet, exercise, smoking, seeking medical care.
That's definitely considered a major factor. Better reasoning skills might lead to better self-care and risk assessment throughout life.
Yeah.
It fundamentally reframes intelligence. It's not just about school. It might actually be a public health indicator.
Wow. Okay, let's try to pull out some core themes then. Three key messages that really capture the essence of Deary's work here. First, you mentioned the primacy of G.
Yeah, this idea that G, general intelligence, isn't just one theory among many. It's arguably the single most replicated, most robust finding in all of psychology.
And that explains why those general mental ability tests are so predictive across such different fields.
Exactly. Whether it's engineering, medicine, management, complex roles all draw on that underlying G factor. So testing for G often predicts success better than testing for very specific job skills alone.
Okay, theme two. Intelligence is highly consequential. We can't ignore its real-world impact.
Right. Deary doesn't shy away from this. The data shows that these measurable cognitive differences have significant consequences for individual life paths, education, occupation, even health.
It's not about making value judgments, but about acknowledging the predictive power of this trait.
Precisely. And understanding this is crucial for effective social policies, for education, for understanding societal structure. It doesn't negate the huge importance of environment, but it means we have to account for these cognitive differences too.
And the third big theme, that unexpected link, cognitive epidemiology.
Yeah, that connection between childhood IQ and later health and longevity, it really forces us to see the mind and body as deeply interconnected.
Suggesting that cognitive function might be a marker of overall biological integrity or resilience.
It certainly pushes thinking in that direction. It makes intelligence relevant, not just for psychologists and educators, but for public health researchers too.
Deary's writing is very clear, but some phrases really stick. Let's highlight a few key ideas or quotes.
Okay. Well, to establish the scientific foundation, he essentially says, the most replicated and robust finding in all of psychology is that there is a general factor of intelligence, G, which explains why people who are good at one mental task tend to be good at them all. That really sets the stage.
That's the bedrock, yeah. Then there's the stability finding, which is just so powerful.
He puts it concisely. An individual's rank order of intelligence is remarkably stable from late childhood to old age. It just underscores how enduring this trait is relative to your peers across your whole life.
And the health link is unforgettable when he states, how long you will live is predicted by your intelligence score from childhood.
It's such a stark statement, really highlights that mind-body connection in a way that grabs you.
And finally, his call for clear thinking on the topic. We must separate the scientific facts about intelligence from the political uses to which they have sometimes been put.
That's the essential ground rule for having a rational conversation about this, isn't it? Focus on the evidence.
Okay, so bringing this down to earth, how can we actually use these insights in our lives?
Well, one area is just personal understanding, especially around aging.
Thinking about that fluid versus crystallized distinction, GPAF versus GC.
Exactly. If you're getting older, maybe you notice you're not quite as quick picking up brand new, complex skills. That's the gift decline. It's normal. But don't discount the immense value of your accumulated GC.
Your wisdom, your judgment, your knowledge base.
Right. Recognize and leverage that crystallized intelligence. It's incredibly valuable and often still growing. Focus on what you gain with age, not just what slows down a bit.
That's a great perspective shift. What about on a bigger scale, like policy or education?
The Flynn effect is really important here.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that steady rise in average IQ scores across generations throughout the 20th century.
Yeah, people got smarter, or at least scored higher on the tests.
Deary and many others attribute that largely to environmental improvements. Better nutrition, much more schooling, a more complex and cognitively demanding society overall.
So that proves environment matters hugely, right? It validates things like investing in early childhood education, nutrition programs.
Absolutely. It shows we can raise the cognitive potential of the population by improving environmental conditions.
Yeah.
It's not all fixed by genetics.
And what about in the workplace? Hiring and careers.
Well, the finding that intelligence predicts job performance, especially in complex, changing roles, is key. It explains why many organizations use cognitive ability tests in selection.
They're not just testing what you already know, but your capacity to learn, adapt, and solve new problems.
Exactly. In fields that require constant learning, that underlying G factor, that learning capacity, can be more predictive of long-term success than just years of experience doing the same thing.
So, wrapping this up,
mm-hmm.
reflecting on Deary's work, what was the most surprising or impactful thing for you?
For me, I think it's the way he manages to cut through the noise.
Yeah.
He takes this incredibly charged topic and just calmly lays out the scientific evidence piece by piece.
Building that foundation of G, the stability, the consequences.
Yeah. He moves intelligence from this sort of vague, anxiety-provoking concept into something that psychological science can actually study rigorously. The sheer consistency of the G factor findings across so many studies, that's really impressive. Gives you confidence in the science.
I agree with that. For me personally, it was the sheer power of that longitudinal stability data, the Lowthian cohorts.
It is staggering, isn't it?
The idea that where you stood relative to your peers at age 11 tells you so much about where you'll likely stand at 80. It's profound. It makes intelligence feel very durable.
But not entirely fixed.
Exactly. That's the other side. While the rank is stable, the absolute level isn't fixed. And things like health, education, staying engaged, they matter for maintaining that potential over a lifetime. So potential lasts, but you've got to nurture it.
A really crucial takeaway. Understanding intelligence, based on the science Deary presents, it's just fundamental to understanding human potential, how societies function, and even our health.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.